Hi, everybody. Rick Sanchez here. This is going to be one of those days when part of your drive is going to be interrupted by you wanting to not get out of your car. Because the very first release of the interrogation tapes of George Zimmerman are out, and it is shocking what they reveal. But first, we have an update on a story that we told you about yesterday. And this is important. Remember we told you yesterday about the KTLA anchor who said something that was very revealing about himself? His name is Chris Schauble. Again, he's a KTLA anchor who was on the air at the moment that one of his reporters was doing a story at a Mexican restaurant talking about the familiarity that had been created here at this restaurant and the fact that this was the place where people from all over the community always came to celebrate their first communions and their weddings, etc., etc., etc. A very familial place. You know what it's like. You love getting together with family, and there's always that one place that abuela likes. Your grandmother likes going there. Your Aunt Rose likes going there. Because it just, you know what, the grandkids get to hug the grandparents, and you know, Uncle Joe has too much to drink and makes a fool of himself. And it's, you know, family, right? Nothing like family. So in the middle of this report, they're talking about how the particular Latino families in this community love doing that at this particular restaurant. And in the middle of explaining how all these people go to this place, right? This guy says, bond hearings as well. He basically said that these poor Latinos, and, you know, it's a, you know, inner city place. It's, you know, these are not wealthy, established people. And he goes on to say that they are, that their first communions and that their wedding gatherings and that their other gatherings are no different than their bond hearings. And man, did that smack of just pure, if nothing else, prejudice and insensitivity. And we discussed at length that it revealed something about him. Well, here's the update. It's not the first time. It's not the first time that he has said something like this. And that's important. Turns out that Chris Schauble was caught on camera with his in a bad situation in 2010 while working at KNBC. KNBC. The author was demoted for mouthing the words WTF. Of course, he didn't say WTF. He actually used the words on the air. Now, here, I will tell you this as an anchor, as a former anchor, as a guy who spent all his life doing the news on television and somewhat grateful that he's not doing that anymore and that I'm actually having a conversation with you now, which is cogent and normal, where we actually will share. Because there's a difference between a speech and a conversation, and what you do on the TV is a speech. It's a speech, usually a bad speech written by 30 different people, and you have to sit there and read off this machine called the teleprompter. And it's very disconcerting and very strange, and it makes these people who do this for a living really strange and disconnected. They are professional readers whose main job is to make sure their makeup is applied properly. And their level of insight into stories, and it's not even through any fault of their own, is about as thin as the piece of paper that I have in front of me right here. Because it can't be. I mean, how deep do you get when you're reading all day? You know? Anyway, turns out that this isn't the first time he's had a problem. In 2010, while working at KNBC, in Los Angeles, he said W. Now, by the way, it's a very big difference between that and this. He was demoted for that. He made a mistake. He was frustrated. They had the wrong pictures up. They had the wrong story up. The prompter was rolling backwards. He got messed up. He got confused. And he looked at the camera, not knowing he was on camera. And he said, what the? But he didn't say it. He mouthed it. So, you know, frankly, I think that's much more excusable. That doesn't reveal that much about him. It reveals the fact that, like everybody else, he got angry and was upset for a moment. Momentary breakdown. Very different than what he did when he was talking about the Mexican restaurant. I wanted to tell you about that because it's an update to yesterday's story, and I wanted to put it in perspective, and I wanted to be fair. And now let's move on. The telephone number here is 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. I want to start getting you guys on board because what I am about to share with you is very important. I also want you to know that the transcripts, the tapes, the interrogation tapes that you are about to listen to, because we are going to play them for you in the George Zimmerman case, will be available on ricksanchezTV.com. I will put them all up on my website so that you can listen to them, and you will be surprised at what you hear in these tapes. On Twitter, it's Rick Sanchez TV. On Twitter, it's Rick Sanchez TV. You can join me there. And we begin the conversation with this. In the case of George Zimmerman, there's a lot to get to, folks. But I got to tell you, the first thing that strikes me as I listen to these tapes in the George Zimmerman case is the coziness with which he is being treated. Now, think about this. Let's go back, okay? A black kid was in his neighborhood. He assumed the black kid was a thug, a criminal, a suspect. So he follows the black kid to the point where there is a confrontation between him and this black kid, right? So Trayvon Martin is the kid, right? Trayvon Martin is no stranger to the area. Trayvon Martin is in his neighborhood because it's also Trayvon Martin's neighborhood. Trayvon Martin is there because his father lives there. Trayvon Martin had just gone to the store and bought Skittles. And it's raining, and he's wearing a hood to avoid the rain. And on his way home, as he's eating the Skittles, this man starts following him on a cell phone in a very suspicious manner, to the point where Trayvon Martin starts feeling like that's the aggressor. Okay? Know that as you go into this, as you listen to this guy's story. But first, he walks into the police station, right? He walks into the police station. And let me tell you what I see, because I've been watching. I got up at 4:30 this morning so I can go through these tapes for you. And I'm looking at it, and I'm going to play it for you now. But as I'm looking at this, I'm noticing he walks into this police station. There's not a single person of color in the police station. And every single person that he has a conversation with could not cajole him anymore. This is a man who's just potentially, possibly, murdered someone. He's killed someone, we know that. He's saying it was self-defense or accident. But they don't know that. You're not going to believe the way they talk to this guy. Remember yesterday we talked about the study that shows the difference between how you're treated if you're a poor person or a minority as opposed to if you're not. And the study revealed that the disparity was amazing. Wait till you hear this. Wait till you hear this. I want you to listen to the conversations that take place first with the technician who has to do a swab of his mouth to check his DNA, and then with the lady cop who's asked to supervise him, and then with the interrogator himself, all white. This is good, and you're going to hear it. We'll start with the conversation he has with the tech. This is the guy where he walks into the room, and you're about to hear the tech comes up, and he starts having a conversation with him. And we'll take a quick break. As soon as we come back, I'll let you listen to that, and we'll take you through the entire series of tapes, including the point where he says that Trayvon Martin attacked him, and he took out his gun and had to shoot him. You're going to hear it all. You're going to hear it for the first time ever. You're going to hear it all in his own words on Twitter, Rick Sanchez TV. Website, well, you'll be able to hear this for yourself soon, ricksanchezTV.com. Phone calls, if you want to talk to us as you're listening to this, I will go to your calls. So if you have a reaction and you want to share something, because I want your perspective. I want your perspective on this. As I saw this, I had a million thoughts in my head. I said, why did he just say that to him? Why is he joking with him? Why is he so casual? Why is this so cozy? Did he just say something which is inconsistent with his original statement? These are my thoughts. What are yours? 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150 here on KTLK AM. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we'll be right back.
Tomorrow, 6 till 9. It's Stephanie Miller on K-Talk AM 1150.
So here's George Zimmerman walking into the police station after having just shot and killed a 17-year-old boy. You would think, okay, here goes the audio. I'm going to play it for you, but I'm just thinking out loud here. Tell me if you think they're treating him the way they would normally treat someone who has just shot and killed a 17-year-old. Listen to it. You tell me.
You can?
Yeah. No, I try not to breathe whenever I flex swab.
No, I've got to get swabs from out of the jail. Oh, my God, those guys, their breath smells like ass.
Can you believe this? This is the conversation that they're having. This is the technician. First guy he meets, right? He's in the jail. First person he comes along with, hey, how are you? I'm a technician. I'm going to swab your mouth. And this is the conversation. And he's joking with him about what the smells are of the equipment. And it seems to me that he's not even... Now, by the way, this is not a huge town, okay? This is a little podunk town in the middle of Central Florida. It's not like they have a zillion murders. These people shouldn't be callous. All right? This is potentially a murder. Potentially a murder one. At the very least, it's the shooting death of a 17-year-old boy. Even if you were to say that the 17-year-old boy was completely at fault, you still are dealing with an investigation that resulted in the death of a 17-year-old. And this is the comportment. The shooter is now in there, and that's the comportment. That's the way they behave with him. Tell me that doesn't sound extremely cozy. Let's play that one more time.
You can?
Yeah. No, I try not to breathe whenever I flex swab.
No, I've got to get swabs from out of the jail. Oh, my God, those guys, their breath smells like ass.
What's your take as you listen to that? 877-520-1150 is the telephone number. 877-520-1150 is the telephone number. And, of course, you can reach us on Twitter, and people are listening to iHeartRadio all over the country. Do you think it's a little too cozy? But wait. Oh, it gets better. Now, Zimmerman moves out of that room where the technician works on him, who's very friendly, telling jokes. Ha ha, they're laughing. Ha ha. Now he's in another room where he's about to be interrogated. But before he's interrogated, there's a police woman who is supervising him, watching over him to make sure he doesn't, I guess, try to escape. You can't see it, but her body language is one where she's like tired. So she's slouched. She's barely really even watching over him. She doesn't even want to be there. And he's working her. And he works her in coded language. And I'm going to let you listen to what he does to work her, as we say, eat her brain, comerle el cerebro. He's going to make sure that she knows that he's a law-abiding white man and that he doesn't have any patience for them minority types who are on welfare. See, they don't say these things. They don't have to. But you're going to hear it. Mario, what do you think so far just of what you've heard from that first conversation with the tech?
You know, Mr. Sanchez, you know what? What happens with that is they're all calm, cool, and collected. I understand and I feel that, well, excuse me, I chose the wrong word. I know for a fact if he would have been a Mexican or a black gentleman, the conversations would have been a whole lot different.
Mm-hmm.
I know that because I'm Mexican and my wife is black. We work. We're professionals in what we do. But the problem is that when I was younger, I experienced kind of the same thing. My brother got pulled over for a simple ticket, and our car got stripped for a cop to try to find drugs, and he was a white cop.
Well, doesn't it have to do with, you know, I say this all the time, and people get mad at me when I point out that when I turn on the TV and I watch MSNBC or I watch KNBC here in L.A., or I watch any of the local stations. By the way, last time I checked, 48% of the population in L.A. is Latino. There's a reason why you want people who look like the population working in your place. When this man, who just shot a 17-year-old black teenager, walks into this police department, there's not a single person of color in that entire place. The technician who first comes up and starts joking with him, a white guy. The police officer who's supposed to look at him, keep an eye on him to make sure he doesn't go anywhere, a white woman. The interrogator who you're just about to hear, I'm going to play that for you next, who actually asks him questions, a white guy. They're all friendly. They're all cozy with him. They all make him feel real comfortable. They're not really doing anything wrong. They just happen to be comfortable with him. Why? He looks like him. He makes them feel good. They're not bad people. We all do this. That's why you need diversity. You need that black guy in that office somewhere who relates to that 17-year-old teenager, who knows what it's like to be a 17-year-old teenager, who asks himself the question and then maybe brings it to his colleagues' attention. Have you guys thought about the fact that maybe this kid wasn't trying to steal homes or rob, that maybe he was just in the area because he lived there? See, it turns out that was the case. But at that moment, nobody knows that. So they're all assuming, yeah, he just did the right thing. It was some thug, 17-year-old black kid in his community. He went out and confronted him and shot him and killed him. Good for him. We're not going to charge him with anything. See, they don't know the facts. And the reason they don't know the facts is because in their world, those facts are too hard to find. They're not within the realm of what is normally in their heads. And if they had someone there who maybe, as Mario said, had that perspective, that doesn't mean that every time one way's right or the other's wrong. That's the reason you should have diversity. That's the reason these television networks should have people who don't necessarily all look like them. Because of this exact thing that we're looking at right now, right here. Andrea, you're on the Rick Sanchez Show. Go ahead, Andrea.
They are calling from Los Angeles, but we should take a break first.
Andrea, can you hold on? I can't hear Andrea. Why can't I hear Andrea? Is she gone?
Mr. Sanchez.
Hi, how are you? Can you do me a favor?
Yes.
Can you hold on for just a second? Because I desperately want to hear what you have to say. But I got to get this break in. Is that all right? Are you sure?
Okay, sure.
I love you. Stay right there. We're going to be right back. This is the Rick Sanchez Show. And, man, you're going to hear some unbelievable audio over the next hour. You really are. And I want you to hear it because it's important. We'll be right back. The number is 877-520-1150.
Don't miss out on the multimedia mayhem. KTLK AM 1150.com.
877-520-1150. My name is Rick Sanchez. This is The Rick Sanchez Show, and we are talking about things and putting stories in perspectives that aren't normally perspected, to coin a phrase. They are. Most people, I mean, I noticed this morning the way this story was being covered. George Zimmerman's interrogation tapes are out, and you normally what you get is somebody just says, okay, here's the interrogation tape, and then they move on. I watched all the networks do. Well, listen to them, and you hear why this happened the way it did. 877-520-1150. Andrea was good enough to wait through the break, and we love her for that. And she's on the line with us now. And, Andrea, welcome to the Rick Sanchez Show.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mr. Hello?
Yes, you're on. You're good. You skipped there just a little bit, but I think we got you back.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Sanchez. I wanted to say, don't you realize there was no change in blood pressure, no change in emotions, because there's no empathy. Mm. It's like if he was to kill a dog.
Mm.
You know, he felt nothing. They felt nothing. Now, you must remember, this is a small town, very few murders.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone should have been in an uproar. Even the most seasoned police, when they had to shoot us, if the people are walking around asking them, are you all right? Are you all right? there's no feeling.
It's...
It reminds me of in New Orleans and Katrina, Louisiana, when there were more people concerned about the animal rescue than the 1,300 black children that were floating along.
Oh, my God. Andrea, if you were here right now, I would hug you and kiss you. Andrea, I would hug you and kiss you on the lips. Thanks for calling. Your point is such a good one. Empathy. Empathy. It seems like there's so much empathy for this guy. Oh, what a horrible thing you just went through. Oh, and guys, trust me, I've only played one cut. It gets better. Andrea, I want you to listen to this next one. And I want all of you to listen carefully to what happens in this next conversation. Now he's sitting in a room, and a policewoman comes and sits next to him. And this policewoman is bored, and she doesn't want to be there, and she doesn't even see this guy as a threat. And she's just sitting back, and then he starts working her. See, he wants her to know that he's a law-abiding white guy. He doesn't need to say it. It's a dog whistle. You just say, you'd blow the whistle and people hear what you're saying. And then she comes in. Watch. Listen to this. I'm not going to tell you. I want you to figure it out for yourself and call me at 877-520-1150. Here's the next tape that we pulled for you. Go ahead, Mondo.
Good health insurance.
Wow.
It's expensive.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. My father's...
I do the benefits card where you can...
health savings account, and I do that and use that to pay for the visits. That's a good idea. Tax-free.
Pay for my daughter's braces.
That's what my mom did for me. My dad's retired Army.
Let me just stop right there to let you... I don't know if you picked it up, but just a moment ago he said my father... And she interrupted him. He's got a story he wants to tell her. He wants this woman, this police woman, to know that he comes from a family where his dad was in the Army. See, look at the signals he's giving off. It gets better. Then he wants her to know not only his dad is in the Army, but they're anti-crime. And they trust me, it's a big story meant to try and win this woman over, and it works. Wait till you hear her response. She buys it hook, line, and sinker and reveals something about herself. Listen to what she says about people who take advantage of the system. Who do you think she's talking about? Hit it, Mondo.
My dad's retired Army. I'll never forget. They have, you know, really good insurance. And as a kid, they have a form at the pharmacy that you can fill out for, like, not prescription medicine, like Benadryl or hydrocortisone, bandages, stuff like that. And I was a young kid and I took the form and I just started checking stuff off. And I was like, yeah, I want that. And I turned it in and they gave me a bag full of stuff. And I went and I was all excited to my dad. And I said, Dad, look, all this stuff was free. I'll never forget. He said, none of this is free, George. I paid for this with my service. And I felt like garbage.
Someone's paying for it somewhere.
Yeah.
But that's good that he taught you that, you know, because a lot of people just think if someone else is paying for it, they don't care. It's free to them.
Mm-hmm. You know? Go and take it all back.
That's why you'll have with people who have free Medicaid and stuff, they'll go to the emergency room because their kid's coughing too much, you know, instead of going, okay, this isn't really the appropriate place, but they don't care. The doctor will see them and, you know, the state will pay $1,000 or whatever it costs them to visit, and they don't care.
Did you hear her response? A lot of these, catch myself, a lot of these people, they don't care. Who do you think she's talking about? Who do you think he has gotten her? This guy's smart. This guy's good. Especially when he's dealing with stupid people. And these, as far as I can tell, are all very stupid people in this police department. By the way, they fired the chief today. I mean, Jack is joining us from Venice. Jack, you're on the air.
Rick, congratulations for the show. I used to watch you on CNN, and if it wasn't for Lemon and Frederica, I wouldn't watch CNN. But anyway, get to my point. George Zimmerman, he was overzealous into becoming a hero for this community because he could never be a cop, not even a security guard. So he was the head of the neighborhood watch. Mm-hmm. That was his fame, you know. And so he thought, like, if he killed this young kid, this kid had nobody, wouldn't be no repercussions, but he failed to realize somebody always have somebody, and now he's in jail, and I'm glad he fired a police chief.
Jack, let me ask you a question, Jack. Jack, let me ask you a question. You just listened to a tape, two, in fact, of the first people he came in contact when he went into that police department. What is your take of what those conversations are like, what their comportment is, and what you think he's feeling as he's talking to these people?
He's, well, just like I said, he's feeling like he's a hero for killing this kid. This is in his mind. He did the right thing by killing this kid.
But you think? But do you think they should be making him feel that way, or should they seem more suspicious to you?
No, I felt that they really didn't care because he was a young black kid. They didn't care, and they really didn't, and that's why he got away the first time. They really, well, excuse me, take it back. The first detective that was on the scene, he wanted him to be arrested. For murder. He wanted to investigate. You remember that, right? Mm. That first detective. But it was the police chief call and said no.
Dorian is on the line for us as well. Dorian, you're on the air, and our thanks to Jack. Go, Dorian.
Hi, how are you feeling? Well, anyway, like I said before, I've called several times about this in a way, and that this man had done what the 9/11 dispatcher told him to do, which is do not follow him. His ass wouldn't be in jail today. Mm-hmm. And also, too, anyway, you have no right to follow nobody, no place. You have not the legal right to follow nobody, no place. The only ones allowed to follow somebody are the police. And he took it upon himself to be Charles Bronson from Death Wish.
Dorian, thank you so much for the call. We're going to get a break in. The number, again, is 877-520-1150. We've played two chunks of tape. These are the first two people that Mr. Zimmerman has come in contact after shooting and killing a 17-year-old teenage boy. At this point, police really don't know the circumstances of the crime, but there seems to be a lot of assumption going on based on the way they're treating Mr. Zimmerman. Here comes the big part. Now, finally, there's the actual interrogation. One of the officers walks into the room, sits down, takes out a microphone and a recording device, and starts to ask him what happened. You will hear that. When we come back, again, the number, 877-520-1150. On Twitter, you can join me at Rick Sanchez TV. And the entire episode, all the tapes, so you can see them and hear them for yourself, even the stuff that we're not playing now, you can find at ricksanchezTV.com. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is The Rick Sanchez Show, and we'll be right back.
Paradise Found. You're listening to LA's Talk Station, K-Talk AM 1150.
Hey, I'm Rick Sanchez. I think Twitter's exploded or something. We can't get Twitter up.
You probably broke it.
Too many people trying to get on to talk about this George Zimmerman thing. Hey, speaking of George Zimmerman, the number here, 877-520-1150. The board is lit up. A lot of people want to talk about this, and I'm going to get to you, Paul. Stand by. Lupe, I know you're at the second on the list. I'll get to you in a moment, too. But we did mention, and there's a virulent inconsistency here, Zimmerman seems to imply that everything he did at the behest of the 911 caller, or the 911 operator, that she was asking him, find out where he's going, I need you to do this, I need you to do that. And you're about to hear him say all that. But before we get to that, let me let you hear. This is the cut, Mondo, Zimmer 911. And when Zimmer says yes, okay. No, number two. Zimmer following at the very bottom of the page. Play that real quick. Hit that.
Are you following him?
Yeah.
Okay, we don't need you to do that.
Okay, we don't need you to do that. He is specifically told, stop following this guy. You know, because he's some black kid wearing a hood, doesn't give you the right to follow him. But he does it anyway. And then he tells police he did it because they told him. This is the first time I've heard this, and you're about to hear this in the interrogation. Meanwhile, we got Paul standing by. Paul's in Los Angeles. Paul, you're on the air.
Good morning. Real quick, there's a couple of key points that, well, I just probably meant one of the biggest key points. I understand that the conversations in jail were recorded, but I don't know if you're aware as well that there was a passport issue. He had two passports.
Mm-hmm.
He had one passport that was he turned in that expired in May of 2012, and there was a second one that was located in the lockbox that you have in the bank. And that's kind of been swept up under the rug. And then that was brought to light. The judge was very insistent about, well, hey, you know what? But as far as it goes, if you declare, and the passport that he turned in was declared stolen.
Hmm.
So how do you have a stolen passport that you turn into the local authorities, but then you have a secondary backup? I mean, that's, you know, it all leads to the complacency that the man's word cannot be taken.
This guy is so Machiavellian. And by the way, I'm impressed. He's good. He knows how to play the system. He knows how to make sure he moves funds around. He works these cops like they are putty in his hand, and they are dumber than dirt.
Well,
and he,
too,
I mean, listen to this. Hey, Paul, stay there. Listen with me to this exchange. I want you and Lupe to react to it. This is cut number three, Mondo. This is the interrogator finally walks in the room, and this is how they converse with each other. Listen to this.
Hey, we're here talking because you had a really bad night last night, to say the least. Let me see the back of your head. Okay, from here doesn't look too bad. I'm sure if I need some bandages, it doesn't look very good.
You had a really bad night last night. The other guy's dead. The other guy's dead. And he's like, oh, you had a bad night last night. I feel bad. I don't know. Is it me? Am I crazy? Paul, does this just seem like something out of a Fellini movie to you?
Well, you have to look at the fact that it goes back years of interaction with local law enforcement. I mean, everybody knows that his father was either, I think his father's an ex-judge. So that, you know, that lends a lot of credence to you build up a rapport with the police.
But it doesn't
department.
Matter. He just killed a 17-year-old kid. Paul, stay there on the line for just a moment. Stay there. I love you. Stay there. Lupe, I love you too, and I want you to be on the air while Paul and I are talking. What's your take after you hear this man walk in the room and he's like, hey, so you had a bad night last night?
I think that's disgusting, because how bad of a night did Trayvon have?
Trayvon's dead. Trayvon's dead. He's gone. He's never coming back.
And they don't care. You know, the issue that I called about was the fact that George is being portrayed as a white man.
Uh-huh.
Okay, never does anybody say that he's half, he's Hispanic, and then his hatred towards the Latino population, but he has been raised with a white mentality because his dad is white, his dad is of power, mm-hmm. his dad is a retired judge.
Yeah, but that just goes to show who cares what you really are. Tomorrow, Lupe, you and me could go.
Care.
Here's why it doesn't matter. Because who you are has nothing to do with what's on a piece of paper or what's on your skin. You understand? Tomorrow, you and I could go to some agency somewhere and make ourselves put on a piece of paper that we are now Swahili speaking. I don't know. Somebody give me a religion. Buddhists. Tomorrow I'm going to become a Buddhist, okay? Why? Because I don't know. I want to be a Buddhist. So I'm going to go and put somewhere that I'm a Buddhist. So on paper, I am a Buddhist who speaks half Swahili, who is blah, whatever. It doesn't matter. Who you are, hold on. Who you are is in your heart and in your head.
Exactly. And that's why I'm saying that's how he's raised. He was raised to think as a white man. He thinks he's a white man. And everybody in the little hick town thinks he's a white man. And that's why they allow him to have the privilege of a white man when he's picked up by the police. It's just another white man who's killed a little black boy.
Unbelievable. My thanks to you. Paul, you want to close that out?
Yeah, I sure do. You know, it unfortunately, just to recap it, what happened is a travesty. It shouldn't happen. The police take state very simply. He shouldn't have followed, number one. Number two, any neighborhood watch that I've known or been associated with, I don't know any of them to carry a firearm. It's especially in dealing with, you know, unless you have your security license
that
or whatever.
That is a very
Zimmerman
good,
has,
that is
Zimmerman
a very
no.
Hold on a minute, Paul, because you just said something which is key. You know, we've all been talking about the fact that he violated the Stand Your Ground law. We've all talked about the fact that he violated the Stand Your Ground law. But guess what? It goes beyond because the Stand Your Ground law says stand your ground. It doesn't mean go find someone else's ground. Don't follow people. And if it's neighborhood watch, it means watch, watch. I'm here, I'm watching. I'm not going after. I'm not following. I'm not confronting. We've all talked about that. But Paul just hit on something that, you know, as obvious as it is, we haven't talked about. What the hell's he doing with a gun? You want your neighborhood watch guy? You want Joe or Tom or Dick across the street? The guy who's your neighborhood watch guy to sit there and have a couple glasses of wine or two or three beers and then put a gun in his holster and go walking around the neighborhood? Who's he going to shoot? Your kid? Your dog? Your wife? Your husband? Because he thinks they possibly don't belong there? I mean, has anybody asked the question? Or do we sometimes forget to ask the most obvious questions? I'm Rick Sanchez. This is the Rick Sanchez Show. 877-520-1150 is the number. I welcome your calls. We are now at the point where we are going to actually play the interrogation where he gives his side of the story, where he tells police what it is that actually happened when he was attacked by Trayvon, which forced him to have to shoot and kill Trayvon. You're going to hear it for the first time in his own words right here on the Rick Sanchez Show. So glad to have you here. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we're having this conversation together. And I know you are as into it as I am, because I know that when you hear the words that are being expressed by this man who's just shot a 17-year-old boy, Trayvon Martin was a boy, after all, there's something inside of you that just makes you wonder why there's no, even if there's not remorse, there should be some nervousness. I mean, how would you feel How would you feel if you just shot and killed someone? What? I mean, could you immediately be joking with someone? I mean, can you just go all of a sudden and laugh at a knock-knock joke? I mean, what the hell's going on here? How does this... I don't know. I can't imagine what it would be like. Hard to put yourself in that situation. But it just seems a little strange to me. And now this guy comes in who's about to interrogate him, and we're going to listen to that. This one is very long. Lasts quite a bit. This is cut number four. Lee, are you standing by? Are you there, Lee? Lee, are you ready to listen to this with us?
Yes, sir.
All right, Lee, let me set this up for you. You ready? The interrogator walks in. He's told Zimmerman, I want you to be very comfortable, almost to the point where he's coached him. He said, listen, whatever you do, make sure you remain real calm because we're watching you. And just take me through the story. And then he tells him that he's going to ask him 9 questions. And he tells him what the questions are before he asks him. And then he asks him the questions. And here we go. Hit it, Mondo.
The operator asked me if I could get to somewhere where I could see or at least give him a direction of where he was headed.
Mm-hmm.
I said yes. So I pulled out and I drove adjacent to the clubhouse. And I was unfamiliar with the street name. The operator asked me what street I was on. And it's not the street that I live on. It's a side street that cuts through the neighborhood. And I told him I didn't know. And they said, we need to know. When I was at the clubhouse, I gave them the clubhouse address. And they're like, we need to know what house you're in front of. And I said, listen, if you come to the clubhouse, you can go straight and left, and you'll see me there.
Stop that real quick. Did you notice what he's doing here? Did you pick that up, Lee? He's making it sound, and they told me, we need to know. They told, like, they're instructing him to go and investigate for them. When we know damn well that's not the truth. Mondo, do you have the cut again? Play the cut again where they tell him, don't follow his butt. Don't follow him. Play that.
Are you following him?
Yeah.
Okay, we don't need you to do that.
They told him, don't follow him.
Yeah.
But yet he's making it sound on this interrogation to these idiots who are interrogating him like, well, I did what I did because, you know, they're asking me. So what's that street? Find out what that street, like, you know, they're giving him assignments, right, Lee?
Yeah. What it looked like, what it looks like to me is that they're trying to help him to come up with plausible reasons why he did what he did. You know, almost like they're trying to coach him into some kind of justification.
Plausible deniability is what it's called. Plausible deniability. And then the interview continues. Pick it up. Go ahead, Mondo.
You still have a phone? No, I hung up. They said, we have an officer en route. I said, okay, thanks. After he asked me if I wanted an officer there, he said, we have an officer around. I told him to meet me in my car, and I hung up.
Mm-hmm.
And I put my phone away. And when I got about halfway to my car from the street, again, behind the houses in a dark area, I heard him say, you got a problem? And I turned around, and I saw him, and I went to go for my phone and say, and call 911 instead of not emergency this time.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I didn't have my phone in the pocket that I thought I had it in. I had it in my jacket pocket, and I reached for my pocket, and I was looking for my phone, and he just punched me in the nose. And I fell backwards to the side. Somehow I ended up on my back. He ended up on top of me, and he just kept punching my face. In my head.
Stop it right there. For those of you listening to us now on your car radios, I want you to know you're listening to the just released interrogation tapes where police for the first time sit down and ask George Zimmerman why he shot and killed Trayvon Martin. And we're going through it together, cut by cut. Let's get back to that now if we could. Go ahead, Mondo.
I guess I didn't have my phone in the pocket that I thought I had it in. I had it in my jacket pocket, and I reached for my pocket, and I was looking for my phone, and he just punched me in the nose. And I fell backwards to the side. Somehow I ended up on my back. He ended up on top of me, and he just kept punching my face and my head, and I was screaming for help. And he told me, shut the f*** up. I kept yelling for help, and I got a little bit of leverage, and I started to sit up, and then he took my head and slammed it into the concrete several times, and each time I felt like my head was going to explode more than the last. I felt like I was going to lose consciousness, and I started screaming for help, and he covered my nose with one hand and his, my mouth with the other one, and he told me, shut the f*** up, and I couldn't breathe, I was suffocating, and all I could think about was I didn't want him to keep slamming my head on the concrete, so I kind of shifted and squirmed my way out, not out from under him, but like to where, because the concrete was only, it was a sidewalk, and it felt like he only had my head on maybe a quarter of the concrete, and I could shift my way out and get onto the grass, where if he was slamming my head, it would just hit the grass and not the concrete. But when I shifted, my jacket came up and my shirt came up and exposed my firearm. And that's when he said, he like sat up and looked and said, you're going to die tonight, mother. And I felt him take one hand off my mouth and slide it down my chest. And I just pinched his arm, and I grabbed my gun, and I aimed it at him and fired one shot. He kind of sat back and said, you got me here. You got me. You got it. Something like that.
He makes it sound like an old Western, doesn't he? You got me. Look, folks, here's the question. Even if he did, in fact, chase this kid down, even if he did violate the stand your ground law, even if he did lie, even if he was cajoled by all these officers, even if he is being treated with kid gloves, when it comes to the actual altercation, is he telling the truth? Is George Zimmerman telling the truth here? He says what it finally came down to was this guy just attacked me. This 17-year-old kid attacked me. And he had me on the ground. He was hitting my head against the concrete. He was punching me, and there was nothing I could do. He was suffocating me, and there was nothing I could do but take out my gun and shoot him and kill him. That's where this gets so complicated. This is where the rubber meets the road. This is where lawyers will now try and figure out where there is a crime here. And let me tell you something. This is not as cut and dry as some might seem. That's his story. You just heard it. I want to get your reactions. Is it possible that George Zimmerman will walk because in the end he was able to convince people that, look, he was attacked by this kid. The kid attacked him. I guess he felt his life was in danger, that he was going to die if he didn't shoot and kill him. No other recourse. Do you buy it? Is it plausible? And if not, why not? This is what I want to know. 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. You're listening to KTLK AM 1150. And you can reach me at Rick Sanchez TV on Twitter. I want to know what your reaction is after hearing for the very first time what George Zimmerman describes as his own victimization by Trayvon Martin. Is he telling the truth? I'm Rick Sanchez. This is the Rick Sanchez Show, and we'll be right back.
background noise while you're exchanging emails on company time. KTLK AM1150.com.
I'm Rick Sanchez. This is the Rick Sanchez Show, and you finally heard George Zimmerman. It's George Zimmerman's story, and he's sticking to it. We got you back, Twitter, and there is a ton of response on Twitter. People are Twittering it up. Boy, are they ever. And the lines are lit up. And let's go all the way to the East Coast of the United States in Virginia. Matt is standing by in Virginia. Get us going. Matt, get us going, baby.
Hey, how's it going? It's good to hear you back on the air. I watched you on CNN for years, and it's good to hear you back.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I just thought you made the point about how it sounded like he was coached through the entire thing. And I thought, just listening to that, you can almost hear it. You know, he's saying, my head was a quarter way on the sidewalk. I thought if I could just get it to the grass. I'm like, if I was fighting for my life, I wouldn't be thinking all these detailed things. I wouldn't be thinking of exactly where my head is. It sounded weird. It sounded almost scripted.
It did sound at many times like he was scripted. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate you calling us all the way from Virginia. In Ontario, Barbara's calling us. What's your take, Barbara, after listening to George Zimmerman? Do you buy it? Do you buy it, Barbara?
No, I don't, Rick. And you know what's very – I noticed on the tape when he said – that he was reaching in his pocket and it wasn't in the pocket that it was supposed to be. Well, then when we assume that Trayvon thought that his life was threatened, he never knew what he was reaching for when he said he was reaching for the phone, and that's when he was hit. So, you know, that kind of sparked my attention when he said, I was reaching in my pocket, then I reached in the other pocket, and that's when he hit me. Well, at that point, Trayvon probably felt threatened because he didn't know what he had in his pocket.
Yeah, the whole thing is weird. Yeah. You're right. It's hard to figure out who's the victim here, and he certainly is casting himself as that. Thank you for calling, by the way. Let's go to Eva now. She's in Los Angeles. Your take, Eva.
Hi, Rick. Can you hear me?
I sure can.
I don't have a problem with who's the victim. It's Trayvon and his parents and all of us who's lost all of Trayvon's potential. The secondary victim, which I'm realizing from listening to these tapes, is George Zimmerman, who seems to want to live up to his father and who feels very inadequate and needs to feel important. And unfortunately, acquiring a gun came into this. He's in no way qualified to have a gun.
That's interesting. It almost sounds to me as I hear you like you kind of feel sorry for this guy.
Well, I feel sorry for Trayvon's parents and for everyone who knew him.
I get that. But that's not what I just asked you.
Well, I don't know that I do at this point. I'm so angry and so sad about Trayvon, but maybe I do. But we put arms in the hands of people who aren't qualified to use them, and then we put them around kids. And I think we need to look at that. You know what? Yeah, I do. I mean, he must be in hell. Everything he does is trying to justify himself. But I don't. I'm sorry that I can't weigh that as heavily as the loss of Trayvon.
Is there any question in your mind as you listen to it that he was not really telling the truth? After all, it's just the other guy's dead. He can really make up he can recreate any old cowboy western movie scene that he wants to at this point.
And he's obviously watched plenty of them. You know, he's almost good at it.
I'm sorry for laughing, but when you said that, it just he's obviously watched plenty of them.
I mean, I watched old westerns growing up. They were on TV, you know.
What do you think of when he ends his story by saying that Trayvon said, "You got me"? Do you think Trayvon said, "You got me"?
You know, no, that sounds.
John
God,
Wayne?
I don't want to cry on the radio. That's more like I think that's more like Sam Spade or something. That's more like the Maltese Falcon or you know.
Yeah. It seemed a little. I don't want to make light of it, but it just seemed a little odd to me. Go ahead, Eva, finish up because I got so many other people calling in. Go ahead.
If he gets off on this, if he doesn't get the full penalty for which this crime has been assigned. I want a massive, massive class action suit, and I want the money to be used for education intervention for at-risk kids, because we're sacrificing our future. We're sitting by and watching our future.
Thank you so much, Eva. I want to go to Ron now. And Ron, hold on. As I go to you, I also want to mention that I'd like to get calls from people who disagree with these callers. I'd like to know, is there anyone out there who believes this guy and says, yes, he shot him in self-defense because in the end it came down to this 17-year-old kid who, by the way, was not your typical 17-year-old. He's a large, muscular kid. He was. I know the media has shown pictures of him looking like a little tiny boy during his, like, first communion and stuff. But, no, he had grown into a, you know, sizable young man. And those of you who may say, no, Trayvon was going to beat the crap out of him and he had to defend himself. If there's anybody out there who believes that or can defend that, I want you to call me at 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. Let's go to Ron right now, though. Let's go to Mary. She's in South L.A. She's on line two. Mary, take it away. Are you there, Mary? Mary!
Hello?
Hi, Mary. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I want to know what you think about this.
Okay. I believe that George Zimmerman is a Charles Bronson wannabe. The movie star who played the vigilantes.
Mm-hmm.
But what he forgets is in the end, Charles Bronson ended up killing his own son. That is a lesson for all of us. When people become vigilantes, everybody's in jeopardy. The police told Zimmerman, do not go after this kid. Mm-hmm. That's their job. So regardless, he was the aggressor. He was the aggressor. He disobeyed the police. This poor guy, Trayvon, was defending himself. So I have no sympathy for the Charles Bronson wannabe. He disobeyed the police.
Jimmy's okay. Joining us on line one. Jimmy, I got to ask you, do you think that possibly Zimmerman was within his right to shoot Trayvon Martin when he felt like his life was in jeopardy?
Well, I don't feel like he had a right to shoot anyone. Absolutely not. I go back to a few callers ago. Actually, I go back to the incident, listening to your tapes that you've played.
Mm-hmm.
Thing really sticks in mind, Rich, and that is do not follow him.
Mm-hmm.
Anything beyond that, Zimmerman broke the law.
Let's play that again real quick. Play that, Mondo.
Please.
Play that sound once again. Hold on, Jimmy.
Are you following him?
Yeah.
Okay, we don't need you to do that.
That really is an important part of that 911
okay.
call, isn't
after
it, Jimmy?
After that, Zimmerman broke the law. An authoritative person from the police department said, we do not need you to follow him.
Mm-hmm.
He followed him. He approached him. He created the scenario with this young man, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, whatever he might have been, because that incident would have happened anyway. It wouldn't have mattered whether Zimmerman was out to be who he was.
Yeah, but see, Zimmerman's going to say, and this is where it's all going to get real hinky in court. He's going to say, I didn't follow him. I was going to meet the police where we had decided that I would wait for them to arrive. And on my way there, he came after me. He confronted me. He attacked me. See, this thing gets really, I know it doesn't, you know, it doesn't pass the credulity test, because you kind of go, why would the kid go after you all of a sudden? I mean, why would suddenly this 17-year-old kid decide he's going to go beat up some guy? For what? Were you wearing a Rolex? Was there something he was trying to take from you? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense that Trayvon would. There's no explanation. There's no, I don't know. It just seems a little strange to me. But this is what he's going to say, and this is the story he's giving, and I want to know if there's anybody out there who's could possibly call and say, no, I think Zimmerman's telling the truth. 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. This is the Rick Sanchez Show, and I want to know what your take is.
They say radio is a passive medium. I say they are a bunch of fools. Listen like you mean it. K-Talk AM 1150.
I'm Rick Sanchez. This is the Rick Sanchez Show. And you know what makes this work? You know what makes this show? You know what makes your inclusion such a wonderful thing? The fact that if I was on CNN, for example, right now, and we were having this conversation, I couldn't really take this thing apart for you. It's hard. You know, I mean, we would have picked a soundbite, I would have played it, and then we would have moved on to the next story. And there's so much more to this story. This is the type of story that deserves analysis and introspection and conversation where you and I can get our hands in there and feel it, you know, like get our hands in the mud. This is that kind of story. And we're doing this together. And it makes for better coverage. And that's why this works. And that's why the phone lines are lit up. And that's why we're all growing and learning. And I want you to hear right now, before I get you back in here, one more cut. We gathered a bunch of them, we did. Megan and I were here since 4 o'clock this morning working on this for you. And what a fine job this young lady did. This young lady from Long Beach. Got a caller from Long Beach coming in, Meg. Meg. Okay, Mondo, cut 6. This is Zimmerman. Okay, so now we come to the question of, so why'd you shoot him, though? It's not the first time there's an altercation. People get into fights all the time. You know? I've been in plenty of scuffles in my life. I've punched and been punched as a kid. And I've been in fights. I've mostly tried to avoid them. Why did you have to take out a gun and shoot and kill this guy? That's the question. Here's the answer.
And then how did you come to fire upon him from that position? Because you're laying down like this, okay, on your back, right? And then you just bring it out of the holster and straight up like this?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You didn't, like, try to push it into him or anything? No. You just fired it from almost, like, from the hip?
I think I made sure that it wasn't because my hand was in the way. I made sure it was past my hand because his other hand was still on my face.
Okay.
So I made sure it was.
Was he that far away, or he's right up on top of
him? He was like putting all his weight on my nose and my mouth, okay, trying to suffocate me.
Uh-huh.
So he was like creating a crevice with his body.
Uh-huh.
And then he like when he slid to go for my gun.
Did he go for your gun with his left hand or your right hand?
I don't recall.
Okay.
Which hand he used.
But one of the hands went?
Yes, sir.
Okay. The one that was on your mouth?
That's when it clicked that I had my gun, and when he said...
But the hand that was on your mouth, he went to your
yes,
gun?
Yes, sir.
Okay. But then you got it, and you went out like this?
I think I went far enough to where I could make sure that it was past my other hand, and in his general area.
Did you hear what he said? Now, something struck me. The more I listen to this, the more I hear. Something struck me about something he just said there. He seems to be saying that the reason he had to shoot Trayvon Martin was because Trayvon Martin was suffocating him by putting all his weight on his nose and his mouth. Mondo, picture yourself in a fight with someone. And the guy, and you're on your back,
right,
and the guy's not huge. He's not a 300, 400 pounder, all right? We're not talking about an elephant here. We're talking about a 17-year-old kid who I guess weighed what? I guess we could find out. It's probably 180, 170, 160, something like that, right? In fact, they're both about really the same height and same size. Is it possible, if I was on top of you, to put my weight and on your nose and your mouth to somehow suffocate you? Without you simply rolling over, moving, or pushing me off. Could I kill you that way if you and I were the same size?
No, I don't think so. I mean, if I have my two arms free, I would
I don't know.
To push you off.
I mean, look, I'm just saying it doesn't make sense to me. Does it make sense to you, Megan?
That's... Why wasn't his first reaction to, like, buck him off or kind of
and
jerk
run
around?
Like hell.
or just any sort of movement? I mean, I know that's kind of disorienting, but, like, there was no other thought other than just like, I'm suffocating. Oh, wait, there's a gun in my pocket. Yeah. Not like, let me try to use my legs.
Bill in Glendale? I don't know. What do you think of that? Did you hear that?
I just think that this case against Zimmerman is a shoo-in for the prosecutor because the law is called stand your ground, which intimates a pursuer and a pursued. So according to the evidence and according to Zimmerman's own testimony, who was standing the ground and who was doing the pursuing? As far as the suffocation goes, if someone's on top of you, you turn your head to the side so you can get some air. I mean, it's just a ridiculous story, and any lawyer that can't convict this guy should start sweeping streets or something.
Hey, David, you agree with Bill? David's joining us from Long Beach.
I agree with. Yeah, I think what's going to come out. First of all, Rick, I have no reason not to believe his account of the scuffle. The scuffle probably did go down the way he said he did, but I think the salient point in this case was the law enforcement person telling him not to follow him, and also the fact that he had a gun. And one of the preliminary reports in the media was that he was on the phone with his girlfriend, and he told his girlfriend that there was someone following him, and she told him to run.
Good point.
I think those are the things that are going to ensure that Zimmerman gets convicted.
You're absolutely right. I hadn't mentioned that. Thank you. Good job, David. I had forgotten all about it. David's point is extremely valid. We have forgotten the fact that there is evidence in this case that Trayvon, while all this is going on, we hear part of this episode over the phone when Trayvon calls his girlfriend and says, to almost like, in fact, we're going to look for that. Can we look for that? I'm sure it's there. We'll have it for you. Are you kidding? Megan's on it. She's got her crack staff working on it as we speak. But David's point is a good one because we hear him almost saying, these aren't the words, by the way, but I will. We hear him almost saying, some guy is following me. I don't know what's going on, but this strange guy is following me. And then we kind of hear him have a conversation with him about it. And it you could tell, and there's no reason for Trayvon to lie because he's talking to his girlfriend, that he's very concerned about this guy. He thinks this guy's up to no good. Like, he thinks a guy's going to rob him or hit him or do something to him. So, yes, Trayvon does feel threatened at this point. Let's take a break. 877-520-1150. We're going to find that during the break and play it for you. 877-520-1150 is the number. You're listening to KTLK AM 1150. And I'm Rick Sanchez, and this is the Rick Sanchez Show.
No one cares how many songs are in your pocket. What you need is a fresh playlist of ideas. KTALK AM 1150.
Welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez. The lines are lit up like a Christmas tree. Everyone wants in on the conversation about the just released, fresh off the fire, interrogation tapes with George Zimmerman. Interesting that we're also getting a ton of tweets from all over the country, including this one that says, stand your ground works both ways. If some creep was stalking me, I'd kick his ass too. That's interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way, but Zimmerman's using the Florida stand your ground law as his defense, which is why police say they did not charge him because he was standing his ground. This person on Twitter at Rick Sanchez TV is saying, wait a minute. He actually violated the stand your ground law because he violated Trayvon Martin's ground. It was Trayvon Martin who was standing his ground. Now, you would probably say no, Rick, because it's about being on your property. The law says if you're on your property, you have the right to shoot, kill, do whatever you want to anybody if you're standing your ground. Whose property was it? Actually, it was both of their properties. Trayvon Martin belonged there because his father owned the condo. Zimmerman belonged there because he owned a condo. So it was common space between two buildings, both of them own the property. Or both of them certainly belong there. So who's standing whose ground, or who's violating whose ground? I wonder. Ty's in L.A. Ty? Go ahead,
hello?
Ty.
Yes. Listen, I wanted to find out, what is the connection between Judge Father, who is a former judge, and the city attorney? Why did he not charge him? What call did, who did judge call, you know, that night? Did he make a call to his father? And who did his father call that led to him not being charged that very night?
Well, Ty, we don't know the answer to that question, and I'm not sure we ever will. Thanks, Ty. But, you know, sometimes it doesn't really even take a call. Sometimes it's a agreement that is settled with a wink and a nod. Ellen is in L.A. Your take, Ellen.
Hi. I also am concerned about where race fits into all this, and I think it's a huge factor. There are a couple things, though, that I have yet to have explained to me.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that if you shoot someone, unless they're in still shooting back, you render first aid and you call 911.
Mm-hmm.
Why were none of those things done, and why wasn't he questioned about that?
According to the original report, Trayvon Martin was DOA. By the time they got to the scene, Trayvon was dead, and there were no indications of life at the time at the scene.
Now, no, but I'm saying, why didn't George Zimmerman do that?
Why didn't he render first aid to Trayvon?
Yes. Yeah. He shot him. He wasn't going to hurt him. Trayvon couldn't hurt him. Seems to me that if you shot someone in self-defense and they can't do anything back to you, you at least would try to help them.
Do you think he shot him in self-defense?
No.
Interesting.
I don't. I don't think he shot him in self-defense. I think that he shot him... He provoked him and then shot him.
Provoked him is a good – provoked. You just used the word provoked. Let's play the audio tape now of Trayvon Martin's conversation with his girlfriend when he first notices that some guy is following him. Hit that.
He said his man was watching him, so he put his hoodie on.
She says suddenly Martin was cornered, asking the man.
So I said, what you following me for? And the man said, what you doing around here? Somebody pushed.
So in that conversation, the girlfriend says that he was being followed by someone. It was kind of hard to tell out exactly what she says, but there's no question that in that conversation, you can hear what she said, where she was questioned about what Trayvon did, and she has no reason to lie. She said, he told me this strange man was following him, and he started acting funny. Greg is joining us as well. He's on line 5. Greg, you're on.
Hey, I just wanted to tell you that, you know, I had an incident happen last week where I was going over West Boulevard, which goes over the 10 freeway, and saw a guy who appeared to be following a young lady. And he's looking over his shoulder, looked very suspicious. So I followed him. Sure enough, he was following her. They seemed to know each other. I could tell she didn't want to be bothered by him. She was crossing the street diagonally to get away. So I called the police. My point being that I followed from a distance of about a half a block, talked to the police the whole time. At no time did I feel like I wanted to get out of my car and deal with the situation. The only time I was going to get out would be if the guy attacked a woman.
Yeah.
And I wasn't thinking about, you know, Trayvon or anything, but I was thinking in my head, okay, as soon as I inject myself into this situation and approach the people, then, you know, my property gets involved, somebody can sue me for this and all that. So I figured, okay, I'll stay at a distance, talk to the police. There was no reason for Zimmerman to get out of his car to approach Trayvon. He could have just talked to the cops the whole time.
It makes you almost think, by the way, is there anyone out there? I've yet to get a call from someone who will tell me, I think Zimmerman will walk because he did shoot Trayvon Martin in self-defense, and I believe when he says Trayvon Martin attacked him, viciously attacked him, and was trying to threaten his life with that attack. Is there anyone out there who believes that. I would love to hear from you. Cheryl joining us right now from Los Angeles. Your take.
Anybody who calls it says it's going to be a lunatic, as far as I'm concerned. You know, there's a young lady in Florida.
But wait a minute. Cheryl, people have sent this guy $250,000 for his defense.
And they're a bunch of hateful lunatics is what they are.
But they believe.
It's not even what they believe. It's what they want to believe. It's what they want to believe. You know, it's not even they wouldn't believe it. If the guy came. They wouldn't believe it if stood up and confessed and said I shot him in cold blood. They would say, oh no. It's because that's the hate that they want this guy to be able to walk because that's how they really feel. He exactly what they would want to be able to do and get away with it on a daily basis.
It's hard to understand. Yeah. Thanks, Cheryl. Appreciate your call. Boy, you think about this and you start wondering to yourself, don't you? I mean, how does that, you know, there was a tweet that came in moments ago. Let me see if I can find that tweet. And it says, how do we get to the point in this country where something like this happens? How do we get to this point? Because it does really seem like we're far afield. And we shouldn't be. I mean, things should be much more easy to understand, shouldn't they? Guy with gun follows 17-year-old who's unarmed. Man with gun shoots and kills 17-year-old. That's what happened. But then you throw all the zing, bing, all that other information in between. Stand your ground law. One guy's black. One guy's white. The cops are all white. He's looking at him. I mean, all of a sudden it's... And there's this massive argument going on in America. And on certain media outlets, there is no way in the world that this guy is in any way guilty of anything. And in other media outlets, there's no way in the world that he could be anything but a horrible criminal. Woke up that day intent on killing a black child. And I don't think either of those are true. I don't think either of those are true. And I don't think you do either. It's more complex. It's more mitigated. And I'm glad we're talking about it. I'm Rick Sanchez. And this is the Rick Sanchez Show. And we're going to be right back.
Are you following him?
Yeah.
Okay, we don't need you to do that.
We don't need you to do that. But then he goes and tells police that they actually told him to kind of help them find out who this guy was. It's not true, but it's what he says. And they seem to buy it. Hook, line, and sinker. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we are examining together. I am so glad that you're there to help us go through this. Because police have just released the interrogation tapes of George Zimmerman, and we've been playing them for you, but it's not just the interrogation part itself where he talks about why he shot Trayvon Martin. I think one of the most interesting parts of this, and it's the part you won't hear in the media, at least not in the mainstream media, you won't hear this tonight on cable news, you won't hear this on your local news, because they don't do this kind of stuff that we do for you. It's actually the conversation that takes place before the interrogation. See, we can hear the sound of what happens when this man walks into the station. How he's treated by the tech, you know, the tech guy whose job it is to sit him down and take his DNA swab and all that stuff. The female police officer who's looking over him. I want you to hear those cuts. I'm gonna play them for you in just a moment, but first... But first, I got to bring you an update. I got to let you know about something that's going on. Look, Mitt Romney has just given a speech to Latino leaders. Mitt Romney's in a pickle, folks. Governor Romney's in a pickle. And here's what it is. he's a decent man, and he knows right from wrong. But unfortunately, there's that rock, and then there's that hard place. The rock is, to win the primaries, he had to cajole the Tea Party, and he had to make them think to win in places like South Carolina and Alabama and all those places, Arizona. He had to make them think that he was completely anti-Mexican. So he went out there and he said these things like he wants everybody to self-deport. In other words, get the hell out. He tied himself up with the guy in Kansas who actually wrote SB 1070. He slapped Jan Brewer on the back and all but kissed her on the lips. He did all those things. He didn't do it because he really wanted to. I don't even think he did it because he believed it. I think he did it because it was the politically expedient thing to do. And now he regrets it, and he's kind of trying to undo it. And I know this because I know people who have been with him recently who have told me Romney doesn't feel good about this. He knows that he needs to find a way to embrace Latinos. I mean, I think he really believes Latinos are the future, and he's trying to reach out to them, but it's got to be so difficult, given what he said in the past and what he wants to do now. So he just gave this speech. We're going to try and see if we can find the sound and turn it around for you. He just gave this speech to Latinos where he basically came up with he's trying to trump the president's declaration last Friday. The president said, look, if you're a kid and you came over here young, even if you were illegal or even if you're not a documented immigrant, you've been raised in the United States, you've lived a good life, you've gone to school, you've gone to church, you play baseball, you drive a Chevy, you're an American kid, you don't even speak Spanish, how the hell are we going to deport you? Send you where? You're an American. I mean, duh. No different than any other immigrant who ever came to this country. We're not talking about some guy just crossing the border yesterday. We're talking about somebody who's been here for decades. And so the president kind of trumped everybody with this, and now Mitt Romney's trying to play catch-up. And I don't think he's doing it to be politically expedient. I think Mitt Romney really believes that. I do. I think Mitt Romney's a decent guy who's trying to figure this whole thing out, and he hasn't yet. So he just gave this speech, and I'm going to get that turned around for you, but essentially he's establishing his bar now for who gets to stay in this country and why. And it has to do with the military and diplomas, and here we go, hot off the press. Thank you, Megan. Let me read you this. So we do have the sound on this. I think Megan can turn it around for you in just a moment. Where are we getting this? You know what I need? I need my reading glasses. He's arguing that President Obama ignores the Latino community. Headline. He says now, tomorrow, President Obama will speak here, of course. That's the first time he's spoken here since his campaign. That's true. He says, I believe he's taken your vote for granted. I think that's true. President Obama has taken the Latino vote for granted until last Friday when he stopped doing that. Unfortunately, he's still ahead of Romney on that. And now Romney's trying to play catch up. Did nothing to advance, blah, 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 blah. I don't see anything here about a policy change. We'll keep looking. I'll have that for you in just a moment. Before we do anything else, back to Zimmerman. Listen to the very first conversation. He walks into the police station, and this is the first conversation. This is cut one that he has with the guy who... Now, this, remember, Zimmerman just killed a 17-year-old boy. Guilty, not guilty, it doesn't matter. And this is the first person he comes across with. Comes across. Listen to this exchange.
You can.
Yeah, no, I try not to breathe whenever I flex swab. No, I've had to get swabs from out of the jail. Oh, my God, those guys.
Okay, Romney, yeah, takes softer tone on immigration. Here we go. That's interesting. There's another cut I want you to hear. This one, he finally is about to be interrogated, and I want you to hear what happens. Well, let's take the break first, because this one's a little longer. He has a conversation with a female police officer who's very bored and doesn't – he's supposed to be watching over this guy, who, again, just killed a 17-year-old boy. Her job is to keep an eye on him. She's slouched over in her chair – I'm watching the video for you, almost falling asleep. And then finally they get into this conversation, which is very coded, but it's obvious to me, if you hear this conversation, that they're talking about lazy minorities. And he's trying to make sure she understands that he's not one of them, that he's a law-abiding, God-fearing white guy, and that he thinks the other people are lazy. Who's he talking about? Is he possibly talking about the guy he shot? And how does she respond? She's a cop. She's watching a guy who just shot a 17-year-old. How does she respond? Is she dismissive? Or is she welcoming? Does she almost say, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about? In fact, if you listen carefully to what I'm about to play for you, you'll find that she may be taking it even a step further than he's going with it. I mean, you want to hear discrimination? Listen to the tone of her voice, and she's the one who's supposed to be keeping an eye on the guy who shot the 17-year-old. This is like out of a Fellini movie. 877-520-1150 is the telephone number here. I want you to call me on the other side. This is KTLK AM 1150. I am Rick Sanchez. This is the Rick Sanchez Show. We'll be right back.
Proud sponsor of AIDS Project Los Angeles, KTalk AM 1150.
We have breaking news. Mitt Romney has done what certainly appears to be an about-face. Mitt Romney has just given a policy speech on immigration, which is far afield of where he was before. In fact, remember I mentioned just a little while ago? You remember during the primaries, right? When he was trying to win states like Arizona, some of the things that he said? Well, guess what? I'm reading now from the New York Times. And they're saying Mr. Romney, quote, has dropped his confrontational tone that he's taken on immigration during the Republican primary. Instead, he is now promising to work in a series of areas to help immigrants and their families while discouraging people from coming to the country illegally. Duh. Isn't that what everyone's been saying all along? I mean, unless you're an absolute crazy who says we should completely have open borders and anybody should come and go as they please, I don't think there's anybody out there who's been saying, oh, yeah, we don't want there to be any protection on the borders. But anyway, I digress. The news is, and let me take you through it as best I can, Mitt Romney essentially is trying to now follow the coattail of President Obama. And you know what? He may be trying to out Obama Obama. President Obama came out last week and said, look, enough is enough. We got to start finding ways to create a pathway for these people who are in the United States. I mean, what are we going to do? Go out and kill them? Go out and get, you can't get rid of 12 million people. Or can you? As a side note, I had a conversation a week and a half ago with someone who was inside the Bush White House while comprehensive immigration reform was being discussed. You remember, that's when Lou Dobbs was going on the air every night and saying that Latinos had leprosy and stuff like that. Well, this person told me that it got so bad that people inside the Bush White House actually got together and did a review to see if it was possible to literally deport. How many could we deport and what would happen? And they did a study and they brought in all the economists and all the law enforcement people, and they came to a decision, I was told, from people who were there in that meeting with the president. They said it was impossible, that it would have created economic chaos in the country, that it would have been lunacy to even attempt it. And this was not like just somebody saying, nah, we can't. No, they studied it just in case they had to do it. So along now today, and this is the news, Mitt Romney has just come out and said we must find common ground. Quote, we owe it to ourselves as Americans to ensure that our country remains a land of opportunity, both for those who were born here and for those who share our values, respect our laws, and want to come to our shores. This is amazing. This is Mondo. You hearing this? This is Mitt Romney. He's basically...
Are you sure?
No, I'm positive. Mitt Romney has just given a speech where he says, I mean, if you compare this to what he said during the primaries, you're left to ask yourself, who is this guy? And what did he do with Mitt Romney? We can find common ground here, and we must, he uttered. Immigration reform is not just a moral imperative, it's an economic necessity. This is Mitt Romney. This is a Republican candidate for the President of the United States coming out and saying, oh, is he going to catch hell from the Tea Party and the nativists? Oh, my God. Look what he's saying. This is not a moral imperative. This is an economic necessity. Mitt Romney understands, it seems to me, that this is important if he wants to get elected. You're talking about 17% of the population. You're talking about people who are being born here in maternity wards, not coming over the border. We're talking about people who are speaking English, as I always say, drinking diet or drinking Pepsis, and they're not necessarily eating tacos or eating hot dogs and hamburgers and driving Chevrolets. And I think Mitt Romney knows that. This is amazing. His plan includes, listen up, his plan includes giving green cards to immigrants, any and all, who have earned advanced degrees in American universities. You go to college, you get a green card. Providing a path to legal status for illegal immigrants who serve in the military. And beyond that, he says he will cut through red tape. So is he trumping President Obama? You know, if you put on Fox News, they'll tell you he did. If you put on MSNBC, they'll tell you he hasn't gone far enough. But I'm not sure. This is impressive. This is impressive. Doesn't matter if you're on the left or you're right or whoever you are. I mean, as it stood right now, if you're a Hispanic in this country, when people say Republican, you think, yeah, they hate us. Because I heard what they said during the Republican debates. And with the exception of Newt Gingrich, it was vile. But along comes Mitt Romney now, and he's saying, no, forget all I said during the Republican primaries. I'm the new improved Mitt Romney, and I want to know I'm here, and I want you to know I'm here for you. As president, quote, I will stand for a path to legal status for anyone who's willing to stand up and defend this great nation through military service, he goes on to say. This is amazing. Huh. Jeb Bush, former governor of Florida, who's been working on Romney, by the way. Mr. Bush and I had a conversation about a month ago about this. Remember I told you that Mr. Bush had told me, Rick, we have to change the Republican Party's tone when it comes to immigration. Well, he's been working on Mr. Romney. He was there. He says it was a great speech. I was real impressed with it. And I'm glad he came. I think he was received respectfully and warmly. That's Jeb Bush, whose brother tried to pass comprehensive immigration reform. This is fascinating. Huh. Marie's joining us right now. She's on line one. Marie, what do you make of this?
Well, I think that it's quite interesting that Hispanics feel... I got the end of your conversation about someone saying that President Obama has not done enough for Hispanic. You agree with that?
He did last Friday. Last Friday, right. He certainly did.
He did.
But he did enough. He stood up.
What about the children that were already here? What about the children that were already born here? You know what? Hispanics, you know, they're not inclusive. They're not inclusive. He will never do enough for them. They want him to bend over backwards for him.
Who's not inclusive? Who's not inclusive?
He's not a president for Hispanics only. He's a president for all the people. And he can't just bend over backwards for Hispanics and not do something for someone else.
Well, what has he done for him? Wait, hold on. Can I ask you a question, please?
And let them vote for Romney. And you'll see how quick.
And I'm talking, and she's talking, and we're both talking at the same time because she has no interest in having a conversation. She's only interested in giving a speech, and we'll just both keep talking over each other for a very long time, and no one's going to be able to hear anything that any one of us says.
Go ahead.
You said President Obama has done something for Hispanics. Prior to Friday, what the hell had he done for Hispanics? Name one thing. Besides having a mariachi band at the Month celebration or whatever all these presidents do.
He's a president. Well, all I'm saying is this. He's a president for all people. And that's all I'm saying.
Well, that sounds great, but you got to give me action, not words. Thank you, Mary. I appreciate you calling in. Let's take a break. We got George and Jeff and Ron. They're all standing by on the line, and they all have something to say. Here's what I have to say. Mitt Romney has just stepped up and tried to trump the guy who trumped him. President Obama trumped the Republican Party and Mitt Romney and Marco Rubio last Friday when he did the decent thing and said, if you're a kid and you were brought in the United States by your parents and you're basically a little gringo, you should stay. That's what the president did. And everybody said, you know what? That makes sense. Even nativists, I think, are saying, that made sense. Let's stop this crazy, vile language in this tone that we've had. But now along comes Mitt Romney, and he says, no, I agree. You know what? I'm on board now, too. So now both parties are courting Hispanics. What the hell's going on here? What? When did everything suddenly change? And you know what? It's good. It's good. Because that's the kind of country we really are. And sometimes it takes a while to get there, and that doesn't mean we've gotten there, but this is good. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is the Rick Sanchez Show. KTLK AM 1150.
Talk radio for people who think before they speak. KTalk AM 1150.
I'm Rick Sanchez, and this is the beginning of a national conversation. The national conversation continues here out of our broadcast headquarters in Los Angeles, in the beautiful Burbank studios of KTLK AM 1150, but where people from all over the country are listening in and using their Twitter to let us know what they think. And they are convinced in many cases that this is just more politics. Curious says Romney must have his flip-flops today. Is Romney doing another flip-flop? And here's another great point. Raider Hater says, great point about Newt Gingrich. I mentioned that Newt was the only one during the primaries who actually showed some compassion toward immigration. But Raider Hater points out that Newt was soon ripped to shreds over his civil view on immigration. Is Romney about to now be ripped to shreds by Republicans on the right? Is he going to chase the base away? George is standing by. He's in Canoga Park. George, what you got?
That there's a good chance that Zimmerman is going to beat this case, because if you notice him, he's a pathological liar. And all the screaming and everything, he claimed that was him, but Martin's mother said that was her son.
You're right. Look, some people are able to convince themselves of something, and in so doing, they are able to convince others. Remember a guy named O.J. Simpson? Jeff joins us in Santa Clarita. He's on Romney. Jeff, what you got?
Yeah, Rick, I'm just wondering how you could possibly think that Romney, who has gone back and forth on every single issue, seemingly, from health care, which he wrote, to immigration, that this would possibly be anything other than business as usual. I mean, now he's pretty much got the nomination locked up. What makes you think for a moment that he would help the Latino community once he's in?
Jeff, I get the feeling, Jeff, that you're not buying this.
I mean, how could you? You're such a smart guy. I mean, if you are buying it, I mean, sure, it's good to have the dialogue, okay? And obviously, there needs to be a viable solution for immigration. But, you know, this stuff needs to be discussed. But for him to just now all of a sudden do this and say what he's saying, it's just, I mean, it's absurd to me. And how anybody would buy it.
Is it possible, though? Is it possible that someone like Jeb, the smartest of the Bushes, literally took him aside and said, look, you're wrong. I heard what you said when you were campaigning in Arizona and Alabama and South Carolina. Stop that. You're wrong. You've got to stop crapping on these people. And we do need some kind of orderly immigration process that involves something other than you backing Jan Brewer, and he believed him and said, you know what? You're right. Will you give him the benefit of the doubt, Jeff?
Well, look, I'd like to, even though obviously I'm not a supporter of his.
Right.
I think the proof is really going to be, and is he going to have a backbone? Is he going to be able to keep to this supposed new ideal that he has?
Well, here's what he said, Jeff. Jeff, here's what he said. We got the cut now. Let's go ahead and play number. This is cut one from Romney just a while ago.
Some people have asked if I will let stand the president's executive order. The answer is that I will put in place my own long-term solution that will replace and supersede the president's temporary measure. As president, I won't settle for stopgap measures. I'll work with Republicans and Democrats to build a long-term solution. And I'll prioritize measures. And I want you to also know this. I will prioritize efforts that strengthen legal immigration and make it more transparent and easier. And I'm going to address the problem of illegal immigration in a civil and resolute manner. We may not always agree, but when I make a promise to you, I will keep it.
You know, sounds good to me. Let's finally look at this and figure it out rather than sitting on each side screaming at each other. Jeff, stay on the line. You're a smart guy. I want your input as you listen to what Ron has to say. Ron's joining us as well from L.A. Ron, you're in.
Yeah, Jeff, you hit it exactly on the head or the nail. It's no way the Republicans are going to ever go for immigration. Illegal immigration to make them citizens. It's no way. George Bush tried it. They came right back out immediately and said, no amnesty. Sounds like amnesty to me. We're not doing it, and it hasn't happened.
Do you guys think, hey, Jeff, Ron, do you guys think he's going to get he's going to catch crap for this from the base today, tomorrow, whenever?
No, they don't care. What they want him to do is win the presidency. They already know he's not going to do it. They're not going to let him do it, and he's not going to do it because he doesn't want to do it.
Yeah, but they've eaten their own. But they've eaten their own in the past. Look what they did to McCain. I mean, look.
He wants to do is lie to you and get you to vote for him, and then once you vote for him, he'll probably deport all the Mexicans.
Jeff,
that's what they want to do.
Rick is, cynical. As that sounds, and I mean, I definitely like to keep an open mind, but I think this is a guy that's for the party, by the party. I mean, you know, he's going to do anything that he can.
Jeff and Ron, stay there. Paula, let's bring Paula into the conversation. She's on line 7.
Hello, Rick. How are you?
Good. What's up?
Well, Rick, my feeling is, number one, we're spending too much time on the sidebars, as I told the young lady that took my call.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, we all need to come together and realize one thing. No matter which of them is president, if we do not get a more progressive Congress in there to pass this thing, he can stand up there and he can promise us, he can get on his knees. It's not going to pass. We need a Congress that is going to push the President of the United States and the Senate where we want them to go, which is a path to legal citizen for our brothers and our sisters.
Who are already here and who have been here for quite some time. Finish us up. Is that, Jeff, is that you or is that Ron?
All of us people of color need to come together. The Democrats, no matter what color we are, the progressives, we need to stop spending so much time on sidebars because I agree. Romney will say and do whatever he can and has to do to get in.
Well, I can't believe you guys are at least giving the guy the benefit of the doubt. Jeff, was that you who was chiming in there? We got about 45 seconds before we go to break.
Well, what I wanted to say was, Rick, you said that nobody had, that Obama hadn't done anything for any Hispanics.
He hasn't. He hasn't. In fact, not only has he not done anything, he's done worse than any president in history. He deported 1.2 million people and separated 5,000 kids from their mothers and fathers and put them in foster care. That's what he did. That's the truth.
For everybody. And equal pay for women, there are women Hispanics that work too. Equal pay is for everybody. He's the president of the entire United States.
Okay.
Not just any
point well taken. When he does something for all, the Hispanics are affected as well. So is everybody else who breathes. That's a good point. I appreciate it. Let's take a break. Let's talk reality. Let's be real. Let's be smart. Let's take a breath. We're going to be right back. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is the Rick Sanchez Show on KTLK. Our national conversation continues, headquartered in Burbank, California. We'll be right back.
The talk radio revolution is here. Keep telling friends. K-Talk AM 1150.
Rick Sanchez TV is where you turn this into what we have long believed and established as our national conversation with Rick Sanchez. I'm Rick Sanchez. We're headquartered here in Burbank, KTLK AM 1150. Glad to do it for you. Here's Mitt Romney just moments ago on green cards. This is cut two, Mondo.
As president, I'd reallocate green cards to those seeking to keep their families under one roof. And we'll exempt from caps the spouses and minor children of legal permanent residents. And we'll eliminate other forms of bureaucratic red tape that keep families from coming together. Immigration reform is not just a moral imperative. It's also an economic necessity. Immigrants with advanced degrees start companies, create jobs, and they drive innovation at a very high rate.
It's like suddenly he's just part of the choir. I mean, did you hear that? President Obama started the bandwagon. He's driving the bus, and suddenly Mitt Romney jumped on board and now is pushing the president off the driver's seat and saying, no, I'll take it from here. I'm going to lead the charge on this immigration thing. I'm going to show these Mexicans, these Latinos, these Salvadorans, these South Americans, all these people over here, that we and I am the compassionate one. I will push through immigration reform. What the hell is going on? Did I just wake up? When did this happen? I guess it happened a half hour ago. Suddenly we've got the President of the United States and the guy who's running to be President of the United States saying what everybody has been saying that we should have done a long time ago. Nobody's saying let everybody in. Nobody's saying give everybody citizenship. Nobody's saying open the borders. Everybody's just saying let's establish a process. Let's decide who can stay and who can go. Let's give a priority to people who've been here a long time and have done everything right and are good people and God-fearing and church-going, paid their taxes, gone to work, raised their children right, love America, pray, sing the Star-Spangled Banner, drive a Chevy, eat hot dogs. Why do you want to kick those people out? They're paying taxes. They're fighting in our wars. It's just stupid. Because they're browner? Their skin's too brown? Kevin's joining us from Long Beach. What do you make of this, Kevin? Do you believe Mr. Romney? He's saying, I'm in.
Why would you believe this guy? The man has no core. He said a matter of just a couple months ago he would veto the DREAM Act. I mean, this isn't 3, 5, 8 years ago. This is what their whole party is about, Rick, and if you don't see it, I mean, look at all the laws that are in all these southern states about brown people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, down in Georgia, they passed something, one of the laws down there, and they were running out of the Latinos to pick the migrant farm workers.
Yeah, and the agriculture people, the Farm Bureau people, the president of the Farm Bureau, who I spoke with 2 weeks ago, this guy is like a good old boy, nice man, by the way, came to me and he said, Mr. Sanchez, I got to tell you, if we continue this way, we will be importing all our produce. We have to stop this craziness right away. We need that labor. Somebody at the Restaurant Bureau of Georgia told me the same thing. And to your point, Kevin, in Alabama, guess what they're trying to do? In Alabama, they're trying to kick the kids out of the schools. Little kids, 5, 6 years old, they're going into the kindergartens and kicking them out and checking their papers. I don't know, man. I got to tell you, that's just cruel. To kick a little kid out of school in 5th or 6th grade, that's what they want to do in Alabama. And they're proud of it. But hey, let's not get too far afield. That's what they're doing there. Here's Mitt Romney as the leader of the party saying that's wrong. That's what he's saying with his statement. You got to give the guy credit. He's on board. He's on board the bandwagon. He's trying to drive the bus, Gary. Gary, you're on line 8.
Are you talking? It was hard to tell whether I was on or not. I'm on. Is that correct?
You are on, my friend. You are coast to coast, Gary.
Well, I did it. I definitely enjoyed you on CNN.
Thanks, man.
I'm glad you're back.
Appreciate it.
To answer your question about what Obama has done for Latinos, Hispanics, he appointed the first Hispanic female to the Supreme Court.
Well said.
Who's going to help make some decisions that the two males that George Bush at least tried to do some things that the two males of George Bush appointed,
mm-hmm.
Who are letting Citizens United stand and asking silly questions about the Health Care Act that has nothing to do. They clearly show they have no understanding of how the healthcare industry works. But more important than that, I learned at least, and I am a strong Obama supporter.
Mm-hmm.
I try to look at the entire picture.
Of course.
Basically, what we vote for is the best that we can get. And it's really difficult to have to say that, but like the caller said earlier, it's not just about the president. We have a Congress and a Senate. If Mitt Romney is elected, and he even tries to, and believe me, I look at your track record and a recent track record, I just can't believe him. But if he were to try to do some of the things that he promises, he'd be in a fight with Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid. When he's reelected, he's going to be fighting Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan and what have you. So it's really, I think that we need to look more and follow the numbers.
Well, the question is, though, how it's not fighting the folks on the other party. It's fighting the folks within your own party, because this is news that I have just reported to you. I have given you the information. I have let you hear what Mr. Romney had to say in his own words. I have analyzed it for you, given the spectrum of my experience on this topic. And now, what I can't do for you is tell you what the reaction's going to be. I don't know if Fair, for example, is going to come out and say, we are no longer going to support Mitt Romney. I don't know if this is going to make him lose South Carolina or Alabama or Arizona. I don't know how much heat he's going to get from his own side here. That's a question. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is the Rick Sanchez Show. This is our national conversation. And I'll see you tomorrow.